Before the current era of medicine, our ancestors relied on things they could pull from the forest or garden to heal their various ailments. Modern medicine largely displaced herbal remedies, but that takes nothing away from the actual medicinal properties of the herbs. Those are explored at length and with lots of pictures in Rosemary Gladstar's book, Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide. Rosemary Gladstar has 35 years of experience and counting as herbal teacher and practitioner. She wrote several books before this one. She's the rector of the International Herb Symposium and co-founder of the Traditional Medicinal Tea Company, among many other herb connections. She lives in Vermont and joins us by phone. Rosemary Gladstar, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeff. It's great to be here.
So this clearly became your life's work. How did the fascination start for you?
Oh, I was so lucky. You know, I grew up in Sonoma County, actually, is where I spent the first 30-something-odd years of my life. And I lived very close to my grandparents. And my Armenian grandmother was a very well-versed herbalist. And she used to take all of her grandkids out into the fields when she'd be going, you know, to gather plants, and also in the garden when she was weeding. And she felt it was rather her religious duty to teach us about the plants, because she used to tell us, you know, it was her belief in God and her knowledge of the plants that saved her life, because she actually survived the Armenian genocide. And in part, it was because of her faith. She was a very powerful woman, and also because she knew about wild plants so they could eat while they were on those marches. And so, yeah, so all my life, actually, from the time I was really little, I've been fascinated and interested in plants as medicine and food.
Did you guys see doctors much as kids, or were you generally getting home remedies?
Well, you know, I grew up in a large farm family in Sonoma County. My dad was one of those dairy farmers, and as most farmers, he didn't have a lot of money, and so all five of us children were mostly treated with home remedies. There was only two incidences that I recall as a child, and both of them required medical assistance. And, you know, one was when my sister fell off and her horse and broke her hip, and the other was when my little sister swallowed rat poison, and she did survive thanks to the good care of her doctors. But everything else that, you know, we children got into, my parents were able, and with, along with my grandmother's guidance, was they were able to take care of with home remedies.
Swallowed rat poison. Okay, we won't need to go down that trail, but wow, that's I can see why you want to go to the doctor for that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are times, of course, you know, that our conventional medicine, modern allopathic medicine, is so necessary and vital. But in so many instances that people have now been trained to call on doctors or go to the pharmaceutical industry or the store, you know, you can use home remedies. They're safe and ecological and really sane in this modern day, and absolutely effective. That's why people have been using them for thousands of years.
Well, you know, in general, do you see herbs then as a complement to conventional medicine, allopathic medicine?
Well, I see that they can be a complement. You know, they can work together. But I think in certain instances, like, you know, as I said, those everyday kind of, the everyday bumps and bruises of life, I mean, herbs can be used without necessarily complementing another system. And also, they're really effective for those chronic long-term illnesses that are more foundational. They're caused either by lifestyle or habits that we have, and where modern medicine offers, you know, wonderful management and sometimes pain management, they're just superior at. It's not so good at addressing the underlying or foundational causes, where herbs and lifestyle changes often are the things that help to correct those chronic imbalances. So there's times when it's a really good complementary to other systems of healing, and there's times when it can serve as the primary system of healing.
You know, I talked to a nurse a few weeks ago who confirmed that conventional medicine, allopathic medicine, is certainly comfortable with the packaging and the pills and the bags and everything looking all sterile and clean and so forth. So how hard in that backdrop is it to convince people that herbs are not voodoo or something?
Well, I think you just have to look at the statistics right now. Like, absolutely, after World War II, from the late 1940s until the early 1970s, herbs had gone deeply underground. But today in our country, you know, it's, what is it, one out of six people are going to use herbs and or supplements in their healing programs, sometimes with the knowledge of their doctors and often, unfortunately, without. So there's an increase, definitely an increase in the American population to use these plants. So it's not like it's taking a lot of convincing. And I don't ever really try to convince people anyway. I feel like we have various systems, and they work in different times, and people have choices. I believe in health freedom rights, absolutely. But, you know, one of the things that if you are trying to convince people is just to remind people it's the oldest healing system in the world. The longest record that we have of people using medicine goes back to herbal medicine. It's also still the most widely used in the world. The World Health Organization states that at least 82, and it's on the rise, but at least 82% of the world's population still uses herbs as a primary system of healing. And that's taking into account countries that have as sophisticated or more sophisticated systems of healing than we do here in the West, like in Europe, for instance, and in Russia and China, and Japan, they have quite sophisticated systems of healing, and herbs are included in their modern-day healthcare.
So let's begin to remove some of the mystery here. You point out in the book that lots of these herbs we probably know already.
Well, a great many of our most potent medicinal plants are our common weeds or our kitchen culinaries, things that we sprinkle, you know, a little bit on our foods. Those are, I would say, if you use herbs in your cooking, you're already a practicing herbalist. And I say that with a chuckle because the difference is in the dosage, in the amount that you use, whether it's a seasoning or going to be an effective medicine. But every single plant that you use in your cooking has a long history of medicine. Turmeric, which is one of our strongest anti-inflammatory, cinnamon, which regulates blood sugar levels. And all of this is not only empirical evidence, which means that it's been proven over hundreds of years by the actual use of people, but modern scientific studies verify the effects of these plants. And then of course, one of my favorite is just the wild weeds.
All right, we'll get into the wild weeds in just a moment, and we mean that technically, not metaphorically. Rosemary Gladstar is the author of Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide. We'll come back and talk more with Rosemary when we return to the Jefferson Exchange. As we head to this break, let me catch you up on our fund drive, $92,760 as of this moment, getting to $190,000. We hope by 8 o'clock tomorrow night. We've got a bit of a haul ahead of us, about $100,000 left to raise. We can do it with your pledge of support, 888-552-6191 or online at ijpr.org. Back with Rosemary Gladstar and Medicinal Herbs in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Rosemary Gladstar, who's been working with herbs since she was a child. She's written a new book about how we can use herbs for healing purposes. Her book is called Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide, Teas and Tinctures and Poultices and Salves and so much more. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 with questions, comments, and maybe stories of your own about medicinal remedies and how they've worked for you. 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So we're just talking about the fact that we often sprinkle things that we use on our foods, and these are things that are herbs that do have medicinal benefits. You got my attention right away with horseradish. What's it good for, Rosemary?
Oh, it's my number one favorite herb for any kind of sinus congestion. It also is really excellent for the bronchioles. So this time of year, it's so important to use horseradish. In fact, I recommend everybody dig up a horseradish or buy one at your local grocery store and have it on hand. Because, you know, if you even start to get, like, bronchial inflammation or those god-awful sinus infections, there's nothing that works as good as horseradish does. And horseradish has a long tradition of being used as a digestive aid. That's how most people think of it, you know, a little horseradish sauce. If you are eating, like, heavy German food or lots of meat, it aids in the digestion of those heavy foods.
How do you use it for sinuses, for example? You're not going to snort it right up your nose, I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, you could, but that would be pretty dangerous. No, what I usually do is I grate it. I recommend people hand grate it, not in the Cuisinart, because oftentimes by the time you're finished hand grating it, you're going to be clear. And then you mix it with a little bit of honey and maybe vinegar, just to kind of tame it so you can eat it. And then you either serve it on a piece of toast or a little piece of bread, and then just eat it until your sinuses start to drain. And, you know, it's not just even just a gratifying drain. It actually is working on a very deep level to cure that infection and to fight the bacteria and virus.
So a few disclaimers up front in herbal remedies. I mean, can you hurt yourself with them?
Well, you know, there are very potent herbs, actually, very dangerous herbs and herbs that actually kill people. But none of those are legally available to us. You can't buy those in the herb stores. None of them are mentioned in my book. You would have to work to get those herbs. So, you know, generally herbs are incredibly safe. And all of the common herbs that are recommended for everyday illnesses have no side effects. If they do have side effects, it's very idiosyncratic, which means that it's an individual reaction, and usually those are very mild reactions. So it might be a little bit like itchy skin. It would be a mild allergic reaction that goes away when you stop using it. And people can get those for even very common herbs like chamomile or echinacea, which are generally considered safe and are graded safe by our government. People get allergic reactions to milk and strawberries. So, you know, it's that kind of reaction that people can acquire. But I do like to let people know that in the American Poison Control Centers, our main poison control center in the United States, they get so few calls regarding the safety and toxicity of medicinal plants. There's no category for them. Whereas with modern conventional and pharmaceutical drugs, it's the fourth leading cause of death in the United States. It's reported over 100,000 deaths a year from legally prescribed prescription drugs. So we have a fairly large safety net when it comes to using medicinal plants, and especially, as I said, all of those common ones that are written about in the herb books and that you can purchase at your local stores and in the mail order catalogs that are available.
Rosemary, in our instant gratification culture, the question comes to mind whether herbs act as fast as conventional remedies or provide relief as soon.
Well, that's such a great question. I mean, it all really depends on both the illness and the herb. So, like, for instance, with horseradish, when you grade horseradish, as I said, by the time you're done grading it, your sinuses are going to feel better. You know, you take a little bit and it's going to work. Or something like cayenne, you know, just a few grains of cayenne in water, it's going to start getting your blood moving, your sinuses are going to start releasing, your bowels are going to release, you know. So there are some herbs that work really fast, but for chronic long-term illness, like, you know, long-term arthritis and long-term digestive systems, in order to work constitutional imbalances and to help heal those, that does take a long time. And it's certainly the same as required of pharmaceuticals as well, that for long-term chronic imbalances, you have to really, you know, usually we say for every year that you have the imbalance, it takes a month to correct it, and that's very general. That's an arbitrary amount, but it's somewhere along that line.
Rosemary Gladstar is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Medicinal Herbs. Here's a call from Jeannie in Medford. And Jeannie, it sounds like Rosemary read your mind.
Oh, God, I just heard that. That's one of my favorite. If I can just buy one, I get cayenne pepper. And I have, because I also heard what you said, and also that it acts as a catalyst to help other herbs.
Yeah, it helps to move things through the body, for sure. You know, just its very action. And then it's so high in capsaicin, which is a known agent for just movement and getting blood circulating.
How much of herbal medicine, and thank you for the question, Jeannie, is about preventive care or lessening symptoms?
Well, I mean, I would say all medicine should be primarily involved with preventative. That's one of the big problems with our modern medical system. With conventional medicine, there's so little emphasis put on prevention, where in herbal medicine, like 90% of it, it's preventative. You know, like the more that you use these herbs every day, these everyday tonic herbs, the adaptogen herbs, that help us build and restore vitality and energy, the healthier we are. And there are definitely herbs that will help with curatives. You know, there's a big category of herbs that can be used as curatives, but most herbalists and naturopaths and people who are involved in natural healing are going to emphasize wellness, and that's absolutely the place that herbs are the most powerful.
This is not just about use, but it's also about producing, too. And so for those of us who might be thinking about starting an herbal garden, what do we need to get going?
Well, I would say, you know, just to start with those common culinaries, you know, plant basils and holy basil in particular, plant sage and thyme, because those are, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, are some of our safest and really most potent and effective medicines. So we usually think of, again, like an herb like sage or thyme for, you know, sprinkling a little bit in an omelet or your gravies or whatever. But those herbs have a long history and modern scientific studies to verify their effectiveness for colds and flus, and they're very rich in antivirals and antibacterial agents, and they also make great tea. So, you know, it's a win-win. Plant those herbs that are going to grow. And in your West Pacific gardens, oh my goodness, you can grow so many of these plants.
Well, and it's not just what you grow in your garden. I want to come back and talk about weeds, because there's a great section of the book where you say, know your local weeds. So what are some of the weeds we should know the best?
Well, you know, I think about the things that grow in the Pacific Northwest, which almost all these weedy plants do, but like your elderberry, which is prolific in the Pacific Northwest, and it's the most effective antiviral that we have for flus. In Europe, in the Western European countries, it's the number one agent above all pharmaceuticals and other herbs that are sold as both a preventative and a curative for flu virus. And we kind of lag behind in the use of elderberry, but here you have a prolifically grown plant that tastes delicious, makes great syrup, and is so effective for fighting the flu. I would vote for taking elderberry every day as a preventative than a flu shot. But I know, again, it's in choice. But I think if people studied the effectiveness of elderberry, and if it was and people were educated to its use, we'd see far more people using these holistic foods that don't have side effects that are very effective. So elderberry is a great one. And then we have the common dandelion, which is, you know, recognized around the world for its effectiveness as a bitter tonic, as a nourishing tonic. It aids in decongesting the liver and aids in digestion and helps with our immunity, you know, and it's so available and so tenacious. I always like to point out that when you look at these tenacious plants, tenacity is something that's lacking in the American public right now, you know, our ability to root deeply and stand firmly and be strong in the face of a lot of the, illnesses and also emotional traumas that we have today. And so I look at some of these plants not only in their nutritional, what we call nutrient-dense constituents, but also in what they have to offer us in the way that they grow and live. And some of that is we digest, actually, when we eat those plants. You know, that old saying, we are what we eat, so eat dandelion greens if you want to stay strong and be firm.
If you want to be tough, eat a tough plant.
That's right. You know, we need that toughness. And so, you know, I really believe in eating a little of the wild things every day as often as you can, because we need that wildness. We need that rewilding of spirit.
Rosemary Gladstar is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide, and you can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. 800-838-3760 is the phone number to call if you'd like to get in on the conversation by voice. If you want to drop off your thoughts in an email, those go to jx@jeffnet.org. John and Grants Pass is back on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rosemary Gladstar.
Thanks again. You just have a great program. Well, I've got a question for you. A few weeks ago, I suffered a concussion, and it made me, one of the results is that I was throwing up for like a week, and eventually I had to go to the hospital because my kidneys were failing because I threw up so much. What's a suggestion on something like you study that, because I still have nausea problems with my stomach, what's a suggestion? What should I take in your area of work? I've tried pills and all that. This hasn't really helped much at all.
Yeah.
So primarily
go ahead, please.
Well, and I think this is a great example of how conventional medicine and traditional medicine work hand in hand, because obviously going to your physician and seeking medical help was just the smartest thing to do. But for these underlying problems that continue, you know, trying home remedies can be very, very effective. And so in something like this, I would recommend something that's very soothing to the mucosa of the membranes. And so a common weed that grows around you is the mallow, we often recommend marshmallow, which is more often grown, but there's a little wild plant that you'd want to have somebody really show you that's a mallow. It belongs to a large family, the Malvaceae. It's really common in your area. It's actually a beautiful little plant, and it's very soothing to the membranes. And also just to address the trauma, like to have a concussion, to feel that trauma, sometimes using an herb that we call unnerving, or herbs that you use for the nervous system. So an herb like milky oats, which is actually the oatmeal, only this is the milky oats are in their still green stage before the grain is fully ripened. It's a wonderful mucilage, again, soothing, and it's also really good for the nervous system. Milky oats is really great, along with the marshmallow, or an herb like lemon balm, which is really calming to the nervous system and the brain and good for digestion. So and there's actually some very good studies that are being done on using natural therapies, herbs, and other things for people who have traumatic brain injuries and who have it's a very exciting new research that's being conducted now. So I'm excited about that too.
Let's take another call. Here's Vajra in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rosemary Gladstar, the author of Medicinal Herbs.
Thank you. Thank you for this program. Like most Western people, I grew up thinking, that didn't understand the power of herbs. I've absolutely fallen in love with yarrow.
Oh.
And I'd like, yeah. yarrow. And it grows wild up here at 2,000 feet here where we live in Sunny Valley on a mountain. But then I grow it in my garden. And I just want a quick example, anecdote. My husband, Wolfgang, I'm going to tell a tale on him. He calls in often here to the program. He was placing a 75-pound cast iron sink into place, and it fell on his hand, on his finger. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and says, this is going to be black tomorrow. This finger is going to be black. So he took it, and I've been making yarrow tincture. And we soaked it for about 10 minutes in yarrow tincture, and then a little bit later in the day. And the next day, a little tiny black spot in his fingernail was all that there was. This is the most amazing herb for any cuts or bruises or injuries. Can you talk more about it, Sarah?
Well, you've done a great job talking about it. You know, it's one of, if I was to, like, have to list 10 of my most important herbs, yarrow would be that. And I think for most herbalists actually around the world who live in temperate climates like we do, yarrow is on the top of the list, along with herbs like elderberry and dandelion. Some of the most common plants that we find growing close to us are those herbs that are the most important in popular medicine. And that's partly why they're growing next to us. They were brought actually by the early settlers and spread wildly and habitate in places where people live. So yarrow is used for many things, like as a first aid item, just like you said, for bruising and swelling, what we call congested blood, where there's an area where the blood would congest. Yarrow helps to dispel that blood. And I've seen it work miracles where people have sprained their ankles, or have a really bad bruise, much like what you were just saying. And it's also one of our most important herbs used in a first aid situation to stop bleeding both internally and externally. And it works almost miraculously. In fact, that's how it got its name, Achilles milfolium. Achilles used it in the Battle of Troy to staunch the bleeding of the soldiers, and it's still used today in that way to stop external and internal bleeding. And then it's also a great herb for stomach cramps and menstrual cramps. So it's a multi-used herb with really very, very few and minor side effects to it. Most people can use it freely. So, yes, it grows wild. It grows easily in the gardens. Mostly what we're talking about are the wild white and the wild pink varieties. There's a lot of cultivars today that are very beautiful, but they're generally not cultivated for or hybridized for their medicinal properties. So we still recommend using primarily when you can get it the wild white yarrow and the wild pink.
So in addition to the what, we need to focus on what part, because you describe in the book buds and flowers and then leaves and roots. I mean, there are some parts of some plants effective and the others are not?
Well, there's some that are more effective, yes. They all contain different properties. In the yarrow, we're talking about what we call the aerial part. So it's the above ground part. It would be the leaves and the flowers primarily that are used.
All right, let's take another call. We have Evan in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rosemary Gladstar, who wrote Medicinal Herbs.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I've always been curious about this field of medicine, and my wife has struggled for a while with shin splints, and I was wondering if there was anything specifically you could recommend to help those tendons reattach the silver skin there.
I just want to make sure I understand her with her tendons. Did you say
the silver skin that peels away from the bone on the front of the shin, which is what causes shin splints?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there was something that was specifically helpful for getting those tissues to reattach to the bone.
All right, so shin splints, kind of a fasciitis, I guess, is what
yeah.
it means. Yeah.
So it's one of the most beautiful things that we about modern medicine is that we have many different systems and. And they all can be, as we were talking earlier, complementary. There are herbs that are helpful for that, but it would not be, in my experience anyway, herbs would not be the primary system of healing that I would recommend for healing bone splints. And so there are herbs. Like there's an herb that's called Solomon's seal, and it's excellent. And black cohosh also, even though we generally think of black cohosh for reproductive issues and nervous system issues, it's an herb that's effective. So the Solomon's seal and the black cohosh can be used. There's another favorite herb of mine, comfrey, which I use for all kinds of issues like bones and tendons and muscles, but it's not legal for people to use today. And I personally believe it's from false research, but nonetheless, it's one of those herbs that's generally not recommended as safe. So I can't recommend it on over the radio program, can I? But in a situation like this, I would really look at working with body therapists, people who really can help with bones and tissue, not necessarily massage, which is very excellent for relaxation of the body, but people who actually work on working with that myofascia releasing and with the different body therapies, and that, I think, would be more helpful. So yes to the herbs, but not perhaps as a primary system.
Okay, much more to talk about with Rosemary Gladstar. Her book is Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide. She'll come back on the Jefferson Exchange for more phone calls and emails in a bit more than a minute and a half. In the meantime, let me remind you, it's day 7 of an 8-day fall fund drive on Jefferson Public Radio, and we're searching for $190,000 in donor pledges. We're not quite halfway there yet, so we're really going to have a humming last day and a half to be able to hit that $190,000 goal. We're picking up the pace already. We need to really send it into hyperspace. 888-552-6191 to call a pledge in or make it online at ijpr.org, and make it soon, please. Thanks, and back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to Rosemary Gladstar about her new book, Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide. Rosemary has many years of experience with herbs in a number of different roles, generally as herbal teacher and practitioner. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about medicinal herbs and their uses. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org. Rosemary, are herbal teas the most common way to get herbs into the body?
Well, there are many ways. You know, I would say the teas are probably the most common way, but people also use tinctures, which are concentrated liquid extracts, and also capsules and syrups. So there's really a variety of ways. I always say the best way is the way that that particular person's going to take them. But I love teas because they're maybe not as potent and strong, but they work over a long period of time, and they're very user-friendly, and, you know, water is a completely safe solvent, if you're using good water, that is. So, yeah, and it's just a very simple way of using the herbs. So I do love herbal teas, and, yeah, try to get people to take more and more teas. I've been sort of on a mission for that for the last 30 years. Drink your tea.
Now, honestly, though, do some of them taste awful?
Oh, yeah, some of them really taste really bad.
and, thank you for your honesty.
People are today are so used to, like, not tasting medicine, right? You just swallow your pill down and it's candy-coated or whatever. But teas can, medicinal blends can definitely be blended to taste good. And I think that's one of the reasons that those traditional medicinal teas that I helped to formulate like 30 years ago have become so popular, is they were blends that were very effective, but they were blended in a way that actually made them taste really good to people. So, you know, it's a little bit of an art to learn how to blend some of the lesser tasting good teas with the better tasting, but I give lots of recipes, and, you know, there are many, many books that have good recipes for medicinal blends. So you can make cough blends and, you know, digestive blends that actually do taste good.
So why, for example, would you choose a tea versus a syrup or a tincture?
Yeah, it's really, that's a good question. Well, they all are different delivery systems. So water is, like when you make a tea, it may not be as potent or concentrated, say, as a tincture is, but it's going to work in some ways better, because we tend to think of better as being super powerful, but that's not always true, and especially when people are with chronic illness. Sometimes when you use foods and herbs and medicine that isn't super strong, your body's actually able to process it better. So it's not a familiar concept in most Americans' minds, because we're used to thinking of working well equated with something that's super strong, like a pharmaceutical. And teas are also kind of, they retrain us to become involved in our illness. You know, we're, again, that's just adverse to the way that we've been taught to think of medicine, where we've given up all of our power and we expect somebody else to tell us what to do and we take a little pill. But really, that idea of being self-empowered to be able to make your own decisions and be educated and actually to participate in the making of your medicine can be very, very healing for people. And we see that over and over again. A syrup is really excellent because it's very sweet. So people who wouldn't normally take an herb tea or an herbal tincture like children and sometimes older people, the syrups are really good. They're very sugary, and so they have a lot of either honey or sweetener in them. And that's not always the best medicine, but it certainly tastes good. And tinctures, as I've mentioned, they're very concentrated, oftentimes made in alcohol or vinegar or glycerin sometimes with different solvents. The solvents are the liquid that extracts the chemical constituents of the plant. So they're concentrated, so you just take a little bit. They taste strong, so we usually recommend that you mix them with a little bit of water. So again, you know, there's the capsules, of course. So there's different ways that people can take medicine, and I think probably the most potent and the most effective would be your tinctures and your teas. But it's more important that people take their herbal medicine. So whatever form that they will take them in is probably the most effective form for them.
All right, so it's less about what's how it's delivered, as long as it's the way that you'll take it.
Yeah, I would say the very best medicine in the world isn't going to do anything if people aren't willing to take it, if it's going to sit on their shelf. Some people hate capsules. Like, my husband will not take anything in a capsule, so I usually, and he doesn't like bitter things either. So I oftentimes give him what I call elixirs or syrups or teas that are then mixed with fruit juice, and he loves those, and he'll take them that way.
Sounds fun. Let's take a call here. We have Steve in Eureka on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rosemary Gladstar, the author of Medicinal Herbs.
All right, thank you. I have a question about the use of herbs for combating fungus, like ringworm or athlete's foot. I know about the use of tea tree oil, but I've had some particularly stubborn bouts of skin fungus that some of the over-the-counter medications haven't been very effective against. And I was wondering if there are other medicinal herbs that could be used for skin fungus.
There certainly are. There's black walnut, which has a long reputation as a very strong antifungus. So it's the hull, the outer covering of the black walnut. And also an herb called chaparral, which is it's actually the true chaparral that grows down in the desert regions of Southern California and Arizona and New Mexico and down into the Mexico region. And they're both very antiparasitic and very potent. The problem, and they are very effective for resistant fungus infections like athlete's foot and ringworm, etc. The thing with the black walnut, which I would say works, at least 99% of the time, is it stains the skin black for a period of time, sometimes up to 3 weeks. So, you have to not mind that staining because it will definitely stain. But they are very effective, and there's also an herbalist named Jim Long who makes a very potent antifungal recipe that you can find advertised in many, many herb books and online. It's very popular, and actually, he claims it's like 100% effective, and people that I know who have used it find it really effective. And it's an herbal mixture that includes the black walnut, and I think chaparral as well, and tea tree, but it's used in apple cider vinegar and uses a wash for the foot. So, there's some really excellent things. I mean, in my work as an herbalist, fungal infections like ringworm and also like athlete's foot are really common, and I've seen them respond incredibly well to black walnut, chaparral, and the tea tree that you have mentioned.
All right, just watch out for the staining, obviously.
Yeah, really. If you you're going to have black feet for a little while, for sure.
All right. Marianne and Eugene emailed. She wants to know about blood pressure and whether there are herbs to lower those, like maybe hawthorn.
Yeah, I mean, the most popular one that's fairly renowned is garlic. Using garlic raw, using garlic oil. There's a couple of preparations that are commercially made, one called Kaolic, that's been particularly effective and is well researched. But garlic does have a pretty good reputation for lowering blood pressure. And hawthorn is a tonic for the heart. We usually recommend it for people who have any kind of heart issues at all. And there's other herbs like motherwort and valerian that are also used. And I would just mention that always with heart issues, it's always good to work with a health conscious trained professional like a naturopath or a medical doctor who's very open to traditional and herbal treatments. Those are things that you do want to work with a well-informed healthcare professional.
As you go through time, and I'm sure people are always throwing things at you like, hey, have you heard about this, and does it do this what it's supposed to? I mean, I wonder if there are a few that you've pursued that you realize they really don't do what they're said to be doing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's different with different herbalists. It's like, you know, it's there's certain herbs that I work with that I just find unbelievably effective over and over and over again. And there's certain things that I've seen have been effective for a lot of people and some people not. So I've learned that, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect remedy for every person. An example is echinacea. Echinacea, as an immunoenhancer and as an herb that helps people fight off infections, is generally effective for probably 85% of the population that uses it. Some people don't find it works at all. And I've just learned that, you know, that's individuals or sometimes possibly the quality of the product they're using. But one of the things that I find where herbs do not work as effectively as allopathic medicine is in pain management and pain relief. You know, allopathic medicine has designed amazing remedies to deaden nerve endings and to stop pain. And, you know, the herbs that did that are not legal, like opium poppy you can't buy anymore for obvious reasons. But we do have herbs that we consider anodynes and pain relievers, but they won't work as quickly or as impactfully as an allopathic drug. So when people have severe tooth pains and stuff, that's the times I say, you know, or, you know, major migraine that's coming on. Those are times when over-the-counter medication sometimes just works better than herbs. Though for long-term pain management, I do recommend herbs because, again, they're going to unaddress the underlying issues, not just deaden the pain.
Well, we have learned so much today. I want to thank you for the tour through the herb garden and back into the kitchen as well. Rosemary Gladstar is the author of Medicinal Herbs, A Beginner's Guide, a really fascinating book. Thanks so much for joining us today, Rosemary.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, take care.